talk a little bit about a training that I developed for community workers for human subjects protection, and it's for our project Faith Moves Mountains, a cervical cancer prevention project. And first of all, I'd like to acknowledge the PIs on the project, the Faith Moves Mountains, Nancy Schoenberg and Mark Dignan, and our project manager from the community, Katie Dollarhide, and we can see the co-investigators and assistants. And we were funded by NCI. And this work about the human subjects protection has been published in the Progress and Community Health Partnerships Research, Education, and Action. So you can read about this work in that journal. First of all, the project, the overall project, and a part of my title is missing there. It says faith-based community approach. It should be up there. The project itself, Faith Moves Mountains, is a community-based, faith-based project that is promoting the use of Pap test among rural Appalachian women. And we used a faith-based approach because we found that this has been used in a lot of African-American communities, but it has not been used so much in a rural Appalachian community, which is primarily white. But we found that most people attend church in rural Appalachia, and a third of them say they attend church regularly. Most of those people who do attend church are middle-aged to older women. And so we felt that using a faith-based approach, using churches as our foundation, would be a good approach to get women recruited. And as a foundation, it's a trusted source where women go for health care information. So we, similar to like the Witness Project, we used a faith-based approach, and it's community-based, and it involves using local women to administer a faith-based lay health worker intervention. So the specific aims of our project, the overall project, Faith Moves Mountains, were to examine the factors, both the barriers and assets, that influence the use of pap smears, screenings and follow-up among rural Appalachian women, and to administer this faith-based lay health advisor intervention that's community participatory. We want the community completely involved. We informed it with theory and that it was a culturally consistent way to increase the use of pap smears and appropriate follow-up. And finally, we wanted to evaluate the efficacy of the intervention in a group randomized experimental design. So this project, the training that I'm talking about was for the community workers who were non-key personnel on our project. And we had them involved in several capacities. First of all, they were interviewers, and they collected data at baseline and post-test and follow-up. And we had lay health advisors who delivered the educational program and a tailored home-based interventions. The interviewers and lay health advisors were recruited from the participating churches and the community at large. And in addition to doing the baseline and post-test follow-up, they had contact with the women in the research study throughout the course of the research. And the lay health advisors helped us to identify the women and recruit eligible women into our studies. And they had input into the design of the intervention and assisted us in providing the intervention to the women. So like the interviewers, they had contact with the women throughout the course of the research study. Neither one of these, the interviewers or the lay health advisors, were key personnel though. We also had project management staff, and they are key personnel on the study. They were composed of local community members as well, and they were involved with the overall supervision of our project. We have a project office there in rural Appalachia, and they are the link between the university and the community, basically. They oversee the technical things. They oversee the lay health advisors, the hiring, and the tailored home visits. And they are considered key personnel, and so they are trained in human subjects protection just as we are as researchers. Okay, the problem that we identified is that standard human subjects protection training is developed to meet our needs. It's developed for the needs of faculty and researchers. It is really not developed for the needs of community-based workers. And it all of us have taken it probably. It's cumbersome. It's a big module that we have to read. It's written at a high literacy level, and it is not aimed at community workers that we're recruiting to work in our studies. So the community members may feel reluctant to participate in our research studies because they're intimidated by human subjects protection training, and it's a burden. And so the problem is they are reluctant to participate in our research studies. So the purpose of this training was to develop, the module was to develop a human subjects training that was written in lay terms and contained only the information that they needed, only the things that were pertinent to the non-key personnel and their role in our project. So, of course, there was a process. It was not like we could just go out and train them any way we wanted to. We had to, first of all, the process starts, I need to start back, where it was initiated by our project staff. The staff had to take the CITI that we have to take, that's online, the computer module, and take the test. And once they took the test, they came to us and said, we're not going to be able to recruit anybody because they won't be able to take this test. So they initiated this process, and they came to us and said, this is too much, it's too much information, it's overkill, it's a high literacy level, and how can I go out and get lay health workers and ask them to take this test? So they initiated this process, and then I contacted our Office of Research Integrity, and I said those same things to them, that these are non-key personnel. They will not be asked to obtain informed consent, but they are crucial in our research study, and they need to understand certain parts of human subjects protection training. What can we do? So together with our Office of Research Integrity, I developed a protocol to train the non-key personnel. And the protocol was that we would include certain key components. The protocol included key components regarding how I would develop the module, what components would be included, how I would administer this education to the non-key personnel, and how we would evaluate the efficacy of the training. So the protocol was developed, and we kept it on file at the Office of Research Integrity at the university. So the objectives of the training module, after I developed it, and it was based basically on CITI and other training modules that researchers take based on that, but not the same in the same format. And these were the objectives for the training, that I wanted to be sure that the community workers could identify the three fundamental ethical principles that guide the conduct of research involving human participants, that they could define privacy and confidentiality as it applies to protecting human participants, and describe how these could be maintained throughout the research process, that although they would not be asked to obtain informed consent, that they could define what informed consent was, and that they could understand when it could be withdrawn, because although they wouldn't obtain it, they would be there doing an interview, and a person could withdraw themselves from the study. So they needed to understand when and under what circumstances informed consent might be withdrawn, and that they could apply the principles that they learned during this module to real-life scenarios that they might encounter during their daily research activities. So we developed this training module, and it consisted of about 6 pages of information. And it had an overview of started with an overview of the research process and definitions of important terms such as human participants. The overview explained the purpose of the educational module and why we wanted to give them training in human subjects protection. And in each of the sections, important terms were explained. We gave them examples of how this might apply to them in various circumstances in the community. And in recognition of the importance of the protection of human subjects and the surrounding ethical issues, we wanted to be sure that the community workers had a solid understanding of how these principles apply to community-based research. Therefore, although we changed the format of the information, we were careful to include the fundamental concepts that were required to adequately protect human subjects in research. So these were the key topics that were addressed: respect for persons, beneficence, justice, informed consent, and privacy and confidentiality. And here's an excerpt from, so that you can see like the literacy level that we used and how we were able to explain. Here's an actual excerpt from the overview that we used. And I will not read that to you, and it will be online and in my presentation. But this is just an example of it. So here's a picture of our project manager explaining some things to our ladies. The training was presented to the community workers as a day of training. We had other things we had to train them on, of course, how to be lay health workers and what they were going to do. And it was a part of that day of training. Written materials, we gave them a notebook so that they could refer back to it, so they had written materials, and we also reinforced that with a PowerPoint presentation that explained human subjects protection to them. So after they were trained, we gave them a written test to evaluate the knowledge of the content that we presented to them, and this test was administered by a project director. And according to our protocol, it was sent back to our institution ungraded, and then it was graded by someone at our institution that's not involved in our project at all, and so that we could be sure that they passed. And I also developed the test specifically to cover the content that we had given them in the educational module. The test was also written in simple and easy-to-understand language. And the test had three sections. It had matching, true and false, and case studies. They were required to answer 80% of the test questions correctly in order to be considered trained and be able to work on our project. The case studies are particularly interesting because we developed these because we knew the community and in conjunction with our project manager. And it presented them with situations we felt they really might encounter as they were doing the research. Here's an example of a case study question that we had, and it's an example of what a woman might really experience. She's seen leaving the home of one of the, and everyone knows she's a lay health worker. This is a small rural community, and somebody catches her in the grocery store and says, "I saw you leaving somebody's house," and so is she in the research study? And this is something that they actually might encounter. And it deals with privacy and confidentiality, of course. And we ask them, what would be the most appropriate thing for you to do in this situation? And these are the multiple choices that they had. And we, of course, they're supposed to not try to coerce the other one into participating. They're not supposed to reveal that this person is a participant, but they're supposed to say, "This is confidential information, and I can't talk to you about it at all." And, of course, they don't want to act like they didn't hear what they said and keep shopping, because that would be rude. So these were the choices that they had, and we had several case studies questions that were involved things like that, like using the computer in your home. Your son wants to use the computer. You've got your information there. What do you do? Several real life kind of scenarios for these women. And our conclusion is that we receive very positive feedback from our community workers, from the project managers, from the community workers. Everyone who took the test was able to pass it on the first try. The community members are satisfied with the simplicity and the utility of the training content and the test. And as academicians, we feel that we've advanced a grounded, feasible, and rigorous process of protecting human subjects while keeping in mind community-based participatory research ideals. That's it. And I will take questions. Yes, 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 yes. It has been published in the Progress, in this John Hopkins Press, in the Progress for Community Partnerships. We published how we developed the training, and we talked about how we administered it. And there's also a podcast, because the journal was so interested in how we did it. You know, they can do a Beyond the Manuscript podcast. So they interviewed me and the community project director on a podcast, which you can listen to online. If you go to their journal, you can listen to us online. They asked additional questions about how we developed it, and they asked the project manager a lot of questions. We didn't want to release the actual test and the actual module because it needs to be specific to your community worker, and it's difficult to use our test and our information. We wanted to release how we developed it, but not the actual one, because you need to develop your own in response to your own community. So it is released.
Dr. Patrick,
yes, the journal's name is the, let me make sure I've got it here, is the Progress in Community Health Partnerships Research, Education, and Action. And this is in volume 1.3. They were one of the exhibitors, and the volume that it's in was there. So, because I saw my name in print right there. So, it's a John Hopkins journal. Johns Hopkins. Just as you would expect, they said you can't do this. Everybody has to take the CITI, and once we had several discussions with them and assured them that these were not key personnel, and they wanted to be sure of the role that they had in the research. And once they were clear that these persons would be involved, but they would not obtain informed consent, that anyone who was obtaining the informed consent would be and was listed on our grant as key personnel would be trained according to the protocol, they were happy to go along with it as long as we put the protocol in writing, put it on file in their office, and kept the test, and you know, we developed a protocol. They were happy to go along at that point. I contacted them early on because as soon as my project manager had taken the test, they knew right away there would be a problem. So I would say it took me several weeks because once they gave me the go-ahead, I went ahead and developed the protocol. And until we had to recruit. So it wasn't that was the holdup. The holdup was that we were in the process of recruiting women to be lay health workers and to be involved. So between the time that I approached them and the time they gave me the approval was only a few weeks. I'd say maybe 5 weeks or something like that. Because, you know, it's a bureaucracy. This person doesn't understand, and maybe you should ask someone else. So by the time I really got approval, probably a month to 5 weeks. Once I developed it myself, and there were no other person hours, just my own person, it made it easier. And I went to the CITI, I did have help. I had a research assistant that helped just a little bit. I went to the CITI, went to various things and tried to pull it out. I looked at the literacy levels, you know, and the words. So I'd say it took me... It didn't take very long because we've taken it so many times ourselves. I knew the stuff intimately, and I knew what I wanted to convey to them. So the time it takes to develop a PowerPoint, to put together the written things, and to run it back and forth with my project director to be sure that it was suitable for the community members. So there were several steps involved, but it was not a very time-consuming process. Why we approached them too, we could have just ignored it. And we talked to several academic institutions to find out what they were doing, you know, other people. And some people are just ignoring it. And just because promotoras and lay health workers don't have to technically be certified in human subject protection. So if they're listed as non-key personnel, you don't have to really do anything. But they kind of need to know some things. So we decided, in their interest and our best interest, we would come to some middle ground. There's somewhere in between them knowing nothing and being certified. So you're right, you could almost not do anything.
I think what made me more aware of it, and I went to another institution on Monday where they did not do this.
you've got to make it understandable for the actual community worker that you're working with. It's And if you've already been doing it, it probably won't take as long. You've probably already doing it in a more informal fashion. It won't be so bad.